Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced Program. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie, and I am your host. And my special guest today is Deputy Chief Steve Prisbrowski, and he is out of the Silicon Valley of Northern California. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you, Dr. Hutchison. Very fortunate to be involved with the show, so thanks for reaching out to have me. Look forward to our chat.
You're very welcome. And one of the things I like to do is just jump right into it to talk a little bit about, you know, I know I've read about you. I know you wear many hats. You're an incredible instructor, author of several books. Talk to us a little bit, talk to the listeners about, of course, being deputy chief, but that as well as the other hats you wear as a professional.
Well, I've been very fortunate to be in the fire service now for probably 28, 29 years. Like many others, I started out getting my feet wet in various capacities, a fire explorer, part-time firefighter, volunteer firefighter, and then first full-time position about 25 years ago, and time sure does fly, and I've been very fortunate to work my way up the ranks. About 5 years as a firefighter engineer, another 5 years as captain, about five or six years as a battalion chief. Now I've been a deputy chief for almost about 10 years, and I've been very fortunate to do a lot of different rotations within training, operations, administration, back to training. Very fortunate to be involved with a lot of things within my department as well as outside my department. And as I very much share with others, you know, one of my passions is helping people get hired, helping them stay hired, helping them get promoted, stay promoted, and really have a great career and enjoy their retirement. And it doesn't matter if you want to be a volunteer firefighter, a part-time firefighter, a career firefighter. That's where my passion lies. It really is leadership, professional development, officer development. I've been fortunate to be an instructor at the community college system up in Chabot College, about 45 minutes north of here, for almost as long as, actually longer than I've been a paid firefighter. So over 25 years, whether it's teaching part-time at the Fire Academy, teaching the introduction to fire class, as well as being involved nationwide, whether it's teaching at conferences, writing articles, teaching for fire departments around the country, that'll have me there to have a good day of my Courage Under Fire leadership. Whether it's a day, 2 days, half day, week long, like I said, I'm very fortunate to be involved in a lot of different things. So without a real long, boring bio, I'm very fortunate to be involved with a lot of great things. And I think one of the things I've always wanted to do is just leave things better than I found it, pay it forward, and just do as much as I can in the time that I'm fortunate to be on this earth. So long story short.
That is excellent. Thank you, Steve. Why don't you tell us a little bit? I believe you recently, you were awarded the 2020 Ronnie Jack Coleman Leadership Legacy Award. What's that about?
That's probably one of the things that, really caught me off guard, but I'm really very humbled and honored to be a part of, especially since Chief Ronnie Jack Coleman, legendary fire chief within the state of California, if not the nation, actually lives about 2 hours away in the Sacramento area. And he lives in Elk Grove, just south of Sacramento. I actually spent about a year and a half there as a part-time firefighter before I got down to the Silicon Valley here. And so I've known Chief Coleman over the years. He's been a great mentor. I mean, reading his articles, listening to him speak. I mean, one of many other mentors that I've had in the fire service. And with the CPSC, Center for Public Safety Excellence, I've been involved with them for a number of years. Our department has been accredited for 15 years. We're going through our fourth five-year accreditation cycle as we speak right now. I've been credentialed as a chief fire officer designee, as well as a chief training officer designee. I help them out with doing peer reviews for CTO, CFO applications, have spoken at their conferences over the years. I really truly believe in not just the credentialing process, but also the accreditation process, which is ultimately just best practices, continuous quality improvement. So last year when I was told, or actually, sorry, COVID and the pandemic has brought a lot of things together and clouded the time. But earlier this year, when I was notified that, hey, you're going to be honored in the early May, I think it was like May 2nd or May 3rd conference in Florida for this award. I mean, it floored me because, like I said, Chief Coleman was a mentor of mine. Yeah. And when I saw everything that was basically said about me and the reasons that I was awarded that, it just floored me. And it was an honor to go out there and, like I said, get it and be a part of it. And then, of course, the country shut down. But that's one of those things I'm very honored to be a part of. So thank you.
Well, and congratulations on that award. That is awesome. Yeah. Well, Steve, tell us a little bit about the other hats you wear in life besides your professional career.
Well, one of the reasons that I'm fortunate to be so involved with everything that I do is I joked with you earlier that boredom is overrated. And when I first met my wife here at the department, she now works for another fire department. But when I first met her just about 25 years ago as well, when I got hired, we were very similar personalities in a lot of ways. So we've been married for going on 21 years now. Don't have any kids. I was an only child growing up, and I could go either way on that one. And then she obviously has two sisters, but both have no kids. So she really didn't want to have kids just with the stress and the responsibility there. And it was not a deal breaker to me. So we're just very busy people. She lets me get involved with the things I'm involved with. Like I said, she works in the fire service, so she appreciates that. So it works out great. So very fortunate to be have married well and married up. And in my spare time from the fire service, I just, you know, I really talk about this in class and all the classes I am fortunate to teach. I really talk about just work-life balance, because we live in a very stressful world. 2020, of course, for all of us is just off the charts in so many ways. I mean, we're still looking at our watches, I think, going, well, we got about 5 weeks left of this year. What else is going to happen?
Yes.
And that, I think, is a real test of our resilience and patience, tolerance, and everything else. But work-life balance for me is critical. So, you know, some of my passions, obviously, my wife and I enjoy traveling, sports, you know, love going to baseball games or football games when I get a chance. Also love music, especially rock music, hard rock music, heavy metal music. I know sometimes people look at me and they look, you don't look like one of those people. I'm like, what does those people look like? And it's a good moment for some to say, well, I'm sorry, nothing to be sorry about. I totally get it. I don't judge people, but you know, I really, in normal times, just like being balanced with getting involved with sports, music, whether it's going to concerts, listening to music. I love when people walk in my office at headquarters and they're like, you're listening to that. It's like, anything wrong with that? And then the next minute it might be 1 minute AC/DC, the next minute might be country, the next minute might be Huey Lewis or Journey, and then back to Metallica or something crazy. But hey, it really comes down to, like I mentioned earlier, balance. And that's, I think, what helps keeps me, I don't want to say therapy, but given the challenges we have in the workplace today, especially the higher up the ranks that you go, it's critical to have balance. So I think all those things really help me. Not, I wouldn't say keep me focused, but help keep me from losing my mind sometimes.
Sure. Well, let's talk about balance. Obviously, it's the Get Balanced podcast. But
yeah,
one thing I always like to share with the listeners is remind them of where I'm at, like sort of like the swim lane of balance for in my research and all that is that. And it's through a question, Steve. And the question is, I ask people, is that are your day-to-day behaviors in alignment with your priorities in life? Talk to me about how that relates to how you've been feeling about your live and work-life balance.
Are my day-to-day priorities in line with my...
Or your day-to-day behaviors in alignment with your priorities in life?
Well, regarding priorities in life... I was very fortunate to be raised by two great parents, obviously no longer with us right now, but really instilled in me the value of hard work, you know, being a good human being, you know, and trying to leave things better than I found it. So I'm not perfect by any means. I can't go walk in my backyard and walk on the water because I'll fall in like pretty much both of us. But I do strive to at least be the best that I can be. And to me, whether it's a Monday through Friday business day, like today is an off day of mine, but if it's normal business day like tomorrow, or it's a weekend off or day off like today, it really doesn't change my behavior. I try my best to realize that, you know, a good definition of integrity is always doing the right thing, not when everyone's looking, but not when nobody is looking, but when everybody is looking, because that's the reality, is someone is always watching us today. And it's not like I think myself or anybody else tries to do the wrong thing. But I think recognizing that in today's world, everybody's got some type of tech. I mean, some people carry one phone, some people carry two. Everyone usually has at least one camera, if not a video camera on theirs. You know, I think in today's world, I try my best to really not differ between personal and professional life by just doing the right thing, just treating people right, and trying to do things better every day.
Yes. Yes. And when I teach about work-life balance, I teach about, and you mentioned, so you're touching on this with the phone, is that there are three universal conflicts with balance in general. It's time, right? Mm-hmm. We can't be in two places at the same time, but boy, don't we sure try with our phones, you know, we try. The other one is an energy or strain-based conflict.
Yeah.
A hard shift wipes you out. Physically and mentally. So you go home or the other roles in your life, you know, it creates a conflict because it's strained. And the other one is a behavioral conflict, such as what works well on the fire ground, or if you're law enforcement and patrol, may not be the best behavior in the house or in personal relationships. You know, so we generally come across some of those work-life conflicts in one way or another. But another part of this, Steve, is that in my research just a couple years ago, is that when I looked at people that manage their lives very, very well from a work-life balance perspective, all of them also manage their self-care very effectively. And what I mean is that, you know, that the physical care, the diet, the exercise, you know, the health and wellness that we talk about, the physical and also the mental health and wellness. And they also manage their social and spiritual needs, because we all have them. They're universal needs, you know, physical, psychological, social, spiritual. These are these universal needs that we all have in some degree or another. Mm-hmm. When it comes to health, I think health brings a lot of freedom that few people realize until it's gone.
Yeah.
How have you, through your career, stayed on, you know, in manage that health and wellness component? Now today, you know, we're preaching about it all the time, but when you started, it wasn't that way.
Oh no.
So how have you managed that throughout your career, and has it changed? Has it become more important, less important, or where are you at with that?
Well, I think it's become more important. Number one, as the age years keep on clicking away and you realize that you're getting closer to the other end versus the beginning. I mean, I've always attempted over the years to try to stay in shape, try to have balance, take care of myself, eat right. I hated vegetables as a kid, for whatever reason. And it's interesting that I don't want to say I was fearless, but in my 20s and 30s, those like I probably could have spent a lot more time on self-care in the sense of versus just go, go, go. And it wasn't probably until I hit my 40s that it's like, you know, clock's not ticking and I got to start doing a better job of eating my green vegetables. I can still maybe have those things I enjoy eating or doing, but just moderation, I think, is the key, because I can't speak for you or anybody else, but that's one of the challenge for me getting older and older is when you see people that are younger than you dropping off or having issues or just whatever. And a lot of it is really not self-centered, but self-caused, meaning sometimes we all have control over what goes on. Obviously, sometimes bad things happen to us outside of our control. I mean, you could be the healthiest eater in the world, get hit by a bus on the way out,
right?
Even after looking both ways. But, you know, I think that's one of the things that, again, I wish I probably would have started younger, but now in my early 50s, trying to make sure I, you know, eat healthier, get exercise. I think that's been one of the benefits of the pandemic. We've all been handling this in various forms and fashions, very, you know, happy to work in the field that I work in emergency services, because obviously we're essential workers. Obviously there comes with a challenge and a price to doing that in today's world, but it's actually really, I've probably done more working out this year than I have ever. You know, my wife and I changed one of our spare bedrooms into a home gym because we really don't have a lot of guests over. You know, her mother lives, you know, relatively close to us, and usually for the most part, it's like people come over, they're going to stay at a hotel, which is fine. But we changed our guest room over into a gym, you know, just some basics, a treadmill, a bike. And, you know, she has a Pilates machine. I have some weights. And I look at last night, for example, is like, I come back and, you know, busy day stuff around the house. And at the end of the night, I think I got about an hour in on the bike, just watching the football game, Sunday night football, and I wanted to do a lot more, but it was one of those things. I'm like, why am I kicking myself? I got an hour on the bike in, and you look at maybe a year ago today without that equipment here. I used to go to gyms years ago, but just never could find the time. And at the firehouse, we have the gym. At obviously our administrative offices, we have gyms, but work just got in the way. And others make priority. I never made it a priority, but at home here, it's like, well, I can watch the football game or read the newspaper, read a book while I'm on the bike. And I'm going, wow, a half hour is better than nothing. An hour is better than nothing. 10 minutes is better than nothing. So I think that's the key. And again, it's in the pandemic as well, given everything we're dealing with, that's, I think, caused me to at least look more internally to make sure I'm doing the right things, not just for my wife, but for others around me. So it's, yeah. I think, helped me get better, I think. And again, I'm not perfect by any means. And I know every day I can do a lot better.
How do you stress self-care, the exercise, and yeah, taking good care of yourself at the firehouse?
Well, it's interesting. It's one of the reasons I wanted to promote was because, you know, as a firefighter, then as a captain in the firehouse, then even as a battalion chief in the firehouse, you know, I enjoyed going on calls. I enjoyed the camaraderie, the teamwork, like pretty much most of us do. The reasons we get on this, you know, on this job. And I say job because you could be a volunteer doing it for the same reasons, trying to help others and the teamwork and team bonding. But after a while, I wanted to get more involved in the bigger picture. And as a firefighter, a captain, battalion chief, you can definitely make a lot of change because some of the best change comes from the lowest ranks. But I also wanted to get more involved with the department, which was one of the reasons I stepped up to deputy chief. So in the last 9-10 years, I've been driving a desk, which can make it more challenging. I mean, when I was at the firehouse, I tried my best to not take things home with me, not internalize things. But, you know, we don't get a lot of significant incidents. We don't get a lot of blood and guts. But one of the things that hit me hard when I was still at the firehouse was we have a lot of skilled nursing facilities, a lot of convalescent homes. And over the years, I kept seeing, you know, folks that were the age of my parents and sometimes closer to my age as I got older in life. And it was, I don't want to say depressing because I never got depressed, but it was like a realization of, wow, it's, you know, we're, because we run mostly medical calls and that, you know, it was, I don't want to say I got burned out because it was never burned out as much as just that's, I'm getting older and God, I'm going to be like one of these people one of these days. I mean, I didn't mean that in a negative way. We're trying our best to help them medically, but becoming a deputy chief and working in the office, there's a different type of stress. I mean,
yeah,
I don't respond to incidents unless they're significant or unless I want to, but there's enough stress otherwise with occasional personnel issues. Thankfully, we've got a great department with great people. And, you know, like every other department, occasionally you got a few personnel issues, which can be taxing because these are your brothers and sisters that, you know, you don't want to have bad things happen to their career or their personal life, but we have to deal with those on occasion. And then obviously the stress of being the training chief, being the health and safety officer, hoping that we're doing our best that we can to train our personnel for the challenges they're going to get. We can't train everybody for everything, but we try. So there's some things that obviously I go to sleep with at night going, you know, did we do a good job? Can we do a better job? But again, for balance purposes, I think that's why I'm fortunate to be involved in a lot of different things, because it doesn't take my mind away from things, because I always go to sleep wherever I'm at, knowing that I have a responsibility into the department, but also outside. So I think I've been lucky, knock on wood here, that I haven't had any major significant issues because of the stress of the position, but I'm just speaking for myself.
Yes, yes. And earlier I heard you mentioned that you've done a good job of not taking things home with you. That's a challenge for many. Any advice on, I mean, for others, or how did you manage that?
Well, like I mentioned, I'm fortunate to have a spouse in the fire service. So if I did have things I want to talk about, because of course, getting home, it's the usual, hey, how's your day and everything else. And last thing I want to do is spill all the stuff, but she understood what was going on. So that was helpful for those times I did need to talk about things. And at least from my perspective, that worked. I couldn't even imagine not having a spouse that was not in the fire service or emergency services field, you know, law enforcement, EMS, paramedic, EMT, because I see some of the relationship struggles that come because someone gets home and they, you know, they've had a rough day at the firehouse, they, or maybe a rough week, and they come home and they saw some bad stuff, and their significant other doesn't understand because they can't correlate to what's going on. And sometimes people hold that back, which is not good. It's good that we have our crews at work that we can bond with and de-stress with and everything else. But at least for me, for the most part, I sure hope it's not stuff pent up inside, but I've never been really that distraught coming off shift when I was in the shift, or even now in the office, that bad, where it's just like, oh my God, I guess I've been unique enough to be able to separate the two. I don't forget about the two, but I am able to separate work when I get home and so forth. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm still answering emails or texts or, you know, dealing with issues after hours on occasion, but it just, I don't know. I'm able to get the work done and then move on.
Yeah. Did you ever have a significant challenge with work-life balance through your career, where you sort of had to take a step back and reflect on where things going?
You know, the about the only time is earlier in my career when, you know, I was getting ready for battalion chief position. You know, I was serving as a captain for 5-6 years, and I was preparing for the battalion chief's test. And I took the test the first time, came out number 3, and missed number 2 by very close points. Number 1 and number 2 got promoted, but then I was going to have to take the next test about a year and a half later if I want to get promoted. And, you know, I was really, I think, I don't say scattered or disorganized, but I was doing my work, and I was teaching at the college full time, you know, and on a shift schedule, it was easy to teach full time at the college because I was able to balance both. But there came that point that, you know, if I want to be a battalion chief, I also knew that a battalion chief in my organization and many others, it's not just working a shift. You could work a shift, but you could also work a 40-hour position in the office, which I'm totally fine with as I do now. But I also recognized that if I was going to be going into a 40-hour position, I'd have to really scale back the things I do off duty, which is fine because that's a life choice. Many can't, and good for them. But I chose to promote up the ranks because I wanted to make a bigger positive difference. So I had to scale back a lot of things I was doing full-time teaching at the college. I went back to part-time, just teaching one night a week, you know, and that was a lot easier, less stress of having to manage a full program, and also just reevaluate how I do things, you know. And, you know, my wife and I at the time, you know, doing our thing, but it also was a good thing because it allowed us to start realizing that we're not getting any younger, and we don't wait for our golden years to start going to travel and do things. I think that was a good kick in the pants. And I got promoted to battalion chief that next test. And I think that's helped me focus. And also sometimes saying no to things. My first part of my career was like, I can't say no because I'll never be out of, I may never get an opportunity. And don't get me wrong, there are some things that if you do say no to, you may shut the door. But I've also learned that those are very far and few. So I think that's helped as well too, to strike that balance. At least I'm hoping.
God, yes.
A heart attack later on today or something, but.
Now let's hope that does not happen. when you think of health and wellness, and this is a little bit from, you know, your classes and your experience and your knowledge, and we think about motivation. This is the path that I'm going down. Is okay. That you think about taking care of yourself or wanting to make sure you're there for your wife and things like that, or for your own health. Do you find that it's motivated externally? You do it for some type of external reward, or do you find it's more of an internal, intrinsic motivation? It's just coming from deep within.
I like to think it's just internal, deep within. I mean, just again, when you're younger and more immature versus when you're older and, you know, you maybe experienced more things, I can definitely say it's more internal now because, again, as that clock ticks away, it's like, okay, I don't know how old I'll ever live to, and I hope to be healthy for as long as possible. But it's just, I guess, to me, internal motivation, and especially when you have a family, even if it's just my wife, trying to do the right thing for the right reasons so you don't screw up anything on the home front. You know, I think that's just been an internal motivation of mine, and without speaking for anybody else, but you hear so many people, it's like, well, you know, in the fire service, we talk about the brotherhood, and that's a term that's, you know, you could use generically without being sexist, you know, brotherhood, sisterhood. But one of the things I've noticed in the fire service across the country is that we throw out terms such as brotherhood and family within the fire service left and right, like they're going out of style. And there's nothing wrong with that. To me, family and brotherhood should be mutual. The challenge, though, is sometimes certain people on the job tend to separate them and choose brotherhood over family. Well, they should be the same, meaning when your time is up, meaning on the job, career, and you decide to retire, move on to something else, you may still have the brotherhood if you've kept in contact with those individuals, but the key is that your family will still be the ones that are there. So when you make those decisions for what you're doing, well, it's important to be part of the team because your fire family is your second family. You can't forget your first family because you're hoping they're going to be the ones there until the end. But yeah. Sadly, unfortunately, sometimes people choose the brothers and the sisters of the firehouse over their family based on their life choices or other decisions they make.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've witnessed some of that in your career.
Oh, all across the country, you know, and that's some of the things I talk about in my Courage Under Fire leadership sessions is, family and brotherhood. And we call our department a family. And that's, I see many departments call themselves a family, but families, as we all know, can sometimes be, I don't want to say dysfunctional, but dysfunctional, and that's okay. But also, we all need a kick in the pants sometimes there too. And that's why, to me, true brotherhood, true sisterhood is raising your hand when nobody else is and sometimes saying, no, knock it off, stop it, or I'm not going to enable you. If I truly care and love you, I'm going to actually put a boot maybe in your butt right now without leaving any bruises to hopefully correct that behavior that is maybe going to affect not just the team, but also the family at home.
Right. Steve, could you share a story where that you recall of putting the boot in the butt?
It's thankfully I haven't had to put too many boots in butts over the years. I think as I also share when I teach classes is, you know, I was first promoted a company officer, fire officer about 20 years ago when I first became a captain in summer of 2001. And I think one of the things that I challenged, can you hit pause right now?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm sorry, the question we were talking about.
Well, we were getting into if you had a story maybe of a time when you put, you had to sort of have that serious talk with someone that you thought was, you know, they're going out of balance. They're not prioritizing their family, or you see someone, you know, the path that they're heading down is the ending is not going to be pretty. Yeah. Have you come across that before, or maybe any type of story you could share?
You know, it's one of those stories as I share with a lot of people, I want to share lessons learned so people can learn from my mistakes as well as others. But when I got promoted to captain back in 2001, I tried too hard to be everyone's friend. I think it's critical to be nice. Chief Brunicini, God rest his soul, you know, be nice. Nice is good. But sometimes I was almost too nice where people walked over me. And I think one of the things I learned when I got promoted to battalion chief was that, I mean, you still got to be nice. You still got to respect people, treat people fairly, but you got to hold people accountable when necessary. And I remember one of the conversations with the battalion chief, we all had a long day at the firehouse. I'm there with my crew. And I remember sitting down at the table, we're having the typical firehouse conversation, solving all the world's problems as you usually do around the firehouse table, which is a great place to do it. And then all of a sudden, the conversation turned way south. And I remember one of the firefighters was just talking inappropriately about someone that was not present with us. Mm-hmm. And now I've learned a trick over the years, of course, easier said than done, was that when someone does that, then it's easy just to usually pick up the phone and say, hey, how about we call that person up to see if they're aware of this right now? Because again, we're talking behind their back and they're not here to defend themselves. That usually shuts people down. But back to the battalion chief, I was at the table and I had a firefighter that was going down the wrong path, just really talking disparagingly, inappropriately about someone not there. I just happened to glance out of the side of my eye that the other firefighter was just, you know, eating their food. But this firefighter is just going on and on about someone they didn't really care for. And okay. Well, then the captain, I'm looking at the captain though, out of the side of my eye, basically expecting the captain to shut down the behavior. Well, in this situation, I've learned over the years, you never want to be the highest ranking person in the room when something goes bad, because if something does go bad, the fingers point right at you for either not doing your job or doing your job inappropriately. Well, I looked at this captain, and the captain had a couple options. The captain could have shut down the conversation right there and just say, hey, we don't talk that way about our brothers and sisters that are not present. Or the captain could have, you know, basically joined in the conversation, or the captain could have joined in and taken it to the next level. Well, this captain chose to not just join in, but take it to the next level. So now I got the original firefighter getting egged on by the captain about this one person. I see the firefighter out of the side of my eye, just eating their food, just saying nothing. And the captain's just continuing to go on as his firefighter. And then finally, after a little bit of time, I'm like, guys, time out here. And they're like, what? And I just like, this person here is not here to defend themselves. This is totally inappropriate. I don't want to hear this conversation around the kitchen table or in the firehouse. Okay, save it. And then of course I would expect normal human beings at that point to just say, hey, sorry, chief, my bad, apologize, and then end a story. Mm-hmm. Well, the firefighter was just sort of like, okay, chief, whatever. Well, the captain, instead of saying that, decided to look at me and basically looked at me as like, oh, come on, chief, you forgot where you came from. You know, you used to talk that way when you were a firefighter and a captain, and it's like, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, hey, time out here, Cap. I go, this is where it ends right here. And then of course he wasn't getting it. And then at that point I'm like, all right, let's, this should have waited till after dinner, but now because you want to keep egging me on, let's go into the office and have a conversation. And I wasn't trying to jam the guy up and I wasn't trying to throw him under the bus, but what's the saying? Praise in public, counsel in private. Mm-hmm. By shutting down a conversation, that's not praising, nor is it actually counseling. If I'm shutting down a conversation, that's trying to set the tone, because if I said nothing at all, you know, the old saying, what you permit, you promote. And right. I condone the behavior, but that's my job as a supervisor to be able to shut things down. Well, anyway, I pulled the captain in and he was all getting unglued about, you know, me forgetting where I came from. And I'm just like, okay, first of all, just time out, hear me out here. And he's like, what? And I go, I'm actually trying to help you. And he's like, what are you talking about? I go, well, think about it. That conversation that was going on was heading south and was going to go really south very quickly. And you being the supervisor of that individual, by you not taking that, by not calling a timeout yourself, you put me in a position to do my job. And it's not looking out for my own butt, which it technically is, but I'm looking out for your butt here too, because the last thing I want to have happen is someone under my watch, which he is and they are, get killed, get injured, get in trouble, you know, get cancer, get whatever. And I go, I'm actually trying to throw you a bone and help you out here, because you are heading yourself down a path, because this is the type of behavior, if you look around the country, that gets supervisors fired, fired, suspended, demoted, you know, written up in some capacity. Because again, as a supervisor in today's world, especially in California, you know, I remember when I got promoted to supervisor years ago, they're like, hey, there's a saying here, there's a law on the books, be a supervisor, go to jail. Meaning as a governmental employee from company officer all the way up to fire chief, if I don't provide a safe and a harassment free environment, just like the same thing that company officer, I may go to jail. I may lose my house. I may be in trouble, because that's what the expectation is all supervisors have an expectation to not allow unsafe activities and or harassment related activities to occur in the workplace. So at the end, he still didn't get it, but I'm like, okay, take a look at the policy. The policy is pretty clear that you didn't do your job and you put me in a position, you know, we need to do better than that. We need to treat our brothers and sisters with respect and trust. And if we can't do that, we shouldn't be on the job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the individual, I don't think they ever thanked me or appreciated for what I did to them, but had I not said anything at all, let's say I wasn't even in the room, and let's say that conversation went south. Think back to that firefighter that was saying nothing. It's easy for males to say, well, all three of us are males, so we can maybe talk inappropriately about someone that's not maybe a male. No, it's not appropriate, because you never know. You never know in the people that are in front of you what their feelings internally are. We never know what offends somebody. All it takes is somebody just to raise their hand and say, that was not right, and I'm going to file a complaint. And you can't just say, well, they're my brothers, the firehouse. We all know what we like and dislike. You never know what sets someone off, because the individual that wasn't there was someone's loved one. How would you like that if that was your brother, sister, mother, father? You wouldn't take that for a moment's notice.
Right. Now you're right. And let me get your opinion on, what do you think are the greatest work-life balance challenges in the firehouse today?
Greatest work-life balances in the firehouse, the challenges. You know, I think the shift itself, well, you know, when I got hired, it was a 24-hour shift. Now it's a 48-hour shift. And then given mutual aid deployments in the summertime in California, not uncommon to have half the state on fire, or so it seems. It's a huge state, but
yes,
what that means is that it's not uncommon for us to send personnel out for up to 14 days, if not 21 days. So in that time, they are gone as a crew, as a group, as a strike team, as we call them, five engines and a battalion chief and a trainee, so 22 people. They're gone for 21 days. Well, in that process, those folks that are working normally at the firehouse are doing double duty of having to cover shifts by choice or by being voluntold. So some of the challenges at the firehouse is you may have crews at work that are not just there for a 24-hour shift, or now a 48 that we normally work 48 on, 96 off, but now for 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, a week long at the firehouse. And in some situations, if your family lives close, you can definitely have the family over. Well, obviously that was before pandemic times, because that's sort of another wrench in there with trying to keep the workplace, at least health and safety wise, okay for our personnel. But being away from your family, the shift itself can be very challenging. Now, thankfully with technology, as I point to my phone, it's not just call, but now FaceTime has really changed the game of being able to FaceTime or a Zoom session or whatever else. It's not the same as being in the person with your family and loved ones, but that can, you know, it's a substitute to a certain degree, even when you're out on mutual aid deployment. So sometimes the challenges are, you know, being gone for a long time, being on shift, especially if you live a far away way. When I was getting hired as a firefighter, I was fortunate to purchase a house two blocks out of our jurisdictional boundaries, but still close enough to our area. I couldn't afford the same house that I bought 20 some years ago today because of cost of living. This forces a lot of our folks to sometimes live 2, 3, 4 hours away.
Yeah,
because the cost of living in the San Francisco Bay Area is just through the roof. Even during the pandemic, it's not getting any better. So I think all those things are stressors too, because if someone's commuting to work 4 or 5 hours via car, or maybe on a flight because it's cheaper, Southwest Airlines, you know, that you got to have a strong household that can live without you for 48, 96 hours. I'm fortunate that if the water heater broke when I was at the firehouse and it was a Saturday or Sunday, my wife would not call me to tell me it's broken, but say, hey, by the way, water heater broke. I've already fixed it. I left the bill for you on the office desk there. You can pay me when you get a chance, and you're welcome. And she wasn't sarcastic that way, but it was like, great, thank you, because I'm mechanically declined. She's the mechanically inclined one, so I'm more than happy to work the extra hour or two to help pay for that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think the challenges there are, the shift schedule itself. I mean, we can't deny the benefits of the shift schedule, but we also can't deny the drawbacks of the shift schedule, whether it's being confined at a large time away from our family, or just the stress of maybe a busy system. If you work in a busy system, that's stressful. Even though I love being busy at the firehouse, a lot of firehouses are slow across the country. So that poses a challenge for many, sometimes too, of boredom, even with being involved. And depending on the people that you're working with, you know, sometimes crews really gel together or work together. And then some are really, oh my God, I can't wait to get out of here and enjoy my time off, because this person's here for the day, maybe on overtime or a trade, or you're stuck with them because of the way your system works. So those are some challenges. And also trying to make sure you're all doing the right thing with getting proper sleep in, which can be challenging on shift, eating correctly, getting exercise in. This is a litany of things.
Yes. How do you help, talking about the exercise and eating correctly, how do you do it in your department? How do you help motivate them, or what steps do you do as leadership to help promote that?
You know, I was answering this question to somebody else the other day, and when I think back to the time I've been on the job for over 25 years, our department has been one of the few back then. I mean, more departments now take it seriously, but it was taken very seriously when I got hired. And I know many people in other departments that health and safety, the expectation was, well, you got 10 days off a month to work out. That's your, 20 days off a month to work out. That's your time to work out. When you're on duty 10 days a month, you're running calls. You know, when I look back at all of our firehouses over the years, I know there's always some people that say we should have this better or that better or this improvement or that better equipment. We've done a very good job. I would say nobody's ever perfect, but a very good job of having workout facilities in all of our firehouses. Is it 24-hour Nautilus Fitness? Well, find me a fire department that is, but it's good, decent equipment that the department has provided and maintained and replaced as necessary. You know, so fitness-wise, you know, with a policy, our labor and management process has been very collaborative over the years, and we've always had that collaboration. And we've bought in as an agency years ago, even before I got hired, of fitness, health, and wellness. There's some things we've done recently to take things even to the next step. I mean, we've always provided two sets of turnouts, and I take that for granted until I talk to other firefighters that are just now getting second sets of turnouts. You know, we've always taken for granted trying to make workouts on duty as mandatory as they can be. We're a very busy department, not necessarily call volume wise, but in normal times, pre-pandemic, and when post-pandemic time hits, public relations activities, business inspections, training in various forms and fashions. So as a company officer, you got to get creative. Some crews, you know, choose to work out in the morning first thing. Some choose to work out in the afternoon. Some have to work out in the evening because of just maybe their work schedule. But we empower our company officers to make that time every day. And, you know, they find the time. For those that want to find the time, they do. And it shows usually in our annual fitness assessments, because once a year we require all personnel to pass a fitness assessment, you know. And just looking at our numbers yesterday, you know, again, 100% is the goal. We've got a pretty high rate looking at the averages of all the different, the cardiovascular assessments, the push-ups, the pull-ups, all those other little things. For the most part, personnel pass on the first try. There's a small amount that have to get retested every year by a fitness coordinator. But we're very fortunate, I think, to have that culture of making time for fitness when appropriate, but also doing our job to make sure we're ready when the bell goes off.
Yeah. Well, excellent. Let me shift back over to your family, your wife.
Yeah.
How have you prioritized that relationship? How do you keep, you know, we know about divorce rates in our own United States culture, as well as in the fire service, you know, how do you keep it going? What's the secret?
I'm fortunate, like I said, that she works in the fire service, but my brother-in-law, one of her sister's husbands, also worked on the job. So I think when we met, she was already understanding what the career sort of consisted of, and she also had some aspirations of getting into the fire department. I wish I could bottle this formula and sell it. I mean, maybe it's because we don't have kids. If we had kids, it'd be more challenging because I wouldn't be able to be as busy as I could, but we'd be in five different directions. When I came off shift the first time, because when I got promoted to captain, I spent some time in the field, and I came in the office as a 40-hour assignment, then back to the field as a battalion chief, back in 40 hours, then back for a bit, then 40 hours as deputy chief. Well, when I first went to my first two-year assignment in the office, got 15 years ago, I remember she was like, "You're going to be home every night and on the weekend." You know, I know some families like, "That's great." And she's like, "Wait a second, when you're on shift or working overtime, that's my time. And then you're going to be home now." But I think because I was so busy at first, you know, whether it's teaching at the college or doing other things, it worked out. And then the odd part is when I got promoted to deputy chief and I'm home on a 40-hour week every single day, it's her schedule too. So it works, because for whatever reason, we don't drive each other crazy. And I think it's been working well. She was joking in the pandemic that, "Oh my God, you know, back in March when things shut down," she goes, "You're not going to be traveling anywhere teaching for a number of months." And she was joking about a month ago going, "You know what, after 7 months of doing this stuff, I thought we'd kill each other, you know, just because, you know, we're home every night. we're, you know, we don't have the same days off. Typically my day, you know, she gets like one Friday off. I get the other Friday off, but I also get a Monday off with my 410 schedule. Mm-hmm. And so we have our time to do our things. And then we have the weekends together in the evenings. But by the time we both get home at night, typically around 6 o'clock, it seems to work. So again, I wish I could bottle the formula. I married right. I don't know how I picked her out and she picked me out in that sense, but I guess our personalities gel enough where in normal times, she allows me, that sounds like a bad word, because she's like, I don't allow you to do anything. You do what you want, as long as it's not stupid or unsafe or unethical. But
yeah,
it's she provides me the opportunity to do those things. And we have, I guess, that mutual trust that we're there for each other, but we also need to do the things we enjoy doing outside of ourselves to keep our sanity.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, let me ask you, Steve, is there anything that I did not ask you that you were thinking that maybe I would, or is there an area that you would like to spend a little bit more time on?
You know, I feel bad at answering some of the questions because I wish that there was some secret nuggets that I could offer, because I know I look at what's going on around the country with people I know, things I hear about fire department, non-fire department, the challenges that we are all faced with in various forms and fashions around the country, especially in the pandemic, not just normal times when you talked about relationships. I wish I had some trials and tribulations. I'm not saying I'm a lucky person by any means, because I know luck can change at any given moment for whatever reason. And life hasn't been easy, but I don't know. I mean, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I appreciate the opportunity for one that's listening today to thank, and I want to thank you for the gift of your time, not just yourself, but the gift of the time of the attendees. Hopefully there's some nuggets out there that I was able to offer to help someone in their own personal life, their professional life. You know, feel free to reach out if I can ever be of assistance. You know, I think that's one of the biggest keys in today's world is as I've grown older, realizing how important relationships are, not just the personal relationships within the family and the friends, but also on the job, you know, because those that are successful, both personally and professionally, it's usually because of relationships, you know, not burning bridges over the years. You know, we're not perfect. It's hard to remain in contact with everybody. Things change, times change, people change over the years, but not getting so worked up over what's going on, but trying to do what we can to make things, I guess, leave things better than we found them. So
yes,
I'll shut it right there, but I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome for that. And I couple more questions though. And you're touching on it, I think, is that one of the things I always like to share is that my son is working, or is in school to become a firefighter. That's what he wishes to do. And what, besides what you've said, if you think about it, if you're talking to just these young firefighters or the ones that are soon to be a firefighter, what advice do you have for them in their careers and in life? You know, because it's all in one.
No, thank you for that. And that's great that your son's looking at getting into the career as well, too. And things haven't, I was going to say, changed drastically over the years. But what I try to really instill in those that I'm fortunate to teach at the college, because I really love the entry-level students of the college, because I look back at myself, you know, almost 30 years ago of how passion, the fire, I was just excited. And I still have that excitement. I still walk into the office. I mean, firehouse, more excitement, because firehouse is more exciting than a business office, but I still have the excitement of coming to work, interacting with people. But as I try to tell the future aspiring firefighters, is one of the things that I wish I would have done differently when I was starting out is when I started out, I was worried too much about that piece of paper. When I say piece of paper, I mean the resume, because I was like, okay, I want to be a firefighter. So what do I do to get there? And the more people I talked to, I started visiting firehouses, talking with firefighters. I didn't have any family members in the fire service, but I had some neighborhood friends and family friends. And I started talking to them and they all said the same things. If you want to become a firefighter, you know, find a fire college that has a 2-year degree program and get your EMT, go to paramedic school. That's the, you know, definitely a benefit. Maybe find a fire academy, because some departments, at least in California, required EMT or paramedic and or a firefighter 1 academy certification. Okay. And I worried too hard about getting every certification and every experience on that resume, because when you first start out, you look at that blank resume going, well, I graduated high school, when I started becoming a firefighter, the process of testing, I had my 4-year degree from Cal State Hayward. I was working at Long's Drug Stores, which is now owned by CVS. So just imagine like CVS Drugs or Rite Aid. I was working there as a manager. My resume was like nothing. It was embarrassing. And I'm like, I got to go take this class, get this. And I used to think I had to have that perfect resume to get hired. Doesn't hurt. But then it took me a while that I realized we're not hiring resumes. We're hiring people. It took me 4.5 years to get hired. And some people go, what a loser. I got hired in first test in 1 year. Well, it took me about 50 tests. And of those 50 tests, at least in the Bay Area, a lot of departments were doing random lotteries. I was like 0 for 20 something on random lotteries. That isn't too random in my opinion, but you know what? It is what it is. But in the early 90s, it was very challenging to become a firefighter. But again, the certifications didn't hurt me. But then now that I'm on the job and I've been on oral boards and I've coached and counseled and mentored many candidates, not just entry-level firefighters, but people all the way up to fire chief, it's the person we're hiring. So the key, as I try to tell people, is don't just prepare for the position. Excuse me, don't just prepare for the test, prepare for the position. Yeah, you got to get your EMT or paramedic for a lot of departments because that's the minimum in many places, or your academy. So you got to look around at the area you want to work for and find out what they're looking for. Sometimes some departments don't require anything, but those things like EMT or paramedic or an academy are going to prepare you for the position because you're already getting exposed to what the department's going to want of you and put you through. But we hire people. And one of the signs we used to have in our academy was, you know, we don't test character, we reveal character. And what we meant by that in the academy was revealing character is, you can talk a great game in the 10-minute, 20-minute interview of promising the world of how awesome you are. Hey, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll give them 120%. Yeah, you could have a good background investigation. You may pass the psychological evaluation, the medical evaluation, all those things. But until you're hired and in that, say, recruit academy, like most departments do, now you're placed in a team, the real you comes out because you're put in stressful situations. This is all to determine who's going to make it past the academy and enter a firehouse to serve their probationary period. And I think that advice of character counts, meaning we want to hire good people. Mm-hmm. I can train many people to don an SCBA, pull a pre-connected hose line, throw a ladder. I can't teach you to be nice. I can't teach you to not be a jerk or an a-hole or someone that's totally, I guess, self-serving or whatever else. So those people skills and character traits are those biggest things we're looking for. Excuse me, because when an oral board is looking across at somebody, you know, a fire department oral board is usually 2, 3, or 4 people looking at that candidate going, do I want them as part of my family? You know, our department family, because we are family. Can I work with them for 24 hours, 2 weeks, 3 weeks straight? Are they going to drive me crazy? Are they going to fit in to our culture and be an asset to our community 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road? So I think the keys are you got to understand what departments are looking for in the regard to qualifications so you can at least meet the minimum qualifications. But it's then connecting with that oral board that you are a good, solid human being. You know, you volunteer your time, you give back in various forms or fashions. You don't just check the box get the job and then just do your time on the job 8 to 8 out the gate, as sometimes people say, without leaving things better than you found them. So yeah. Good people skills and preparing for the position, I think, are the number two things for success in one's career that I can offer any entry-level candidate.
Well, very good. I appreciate that. And last question, I think we'll wrap it up, is that I know in the fire service, faith and spirituality plays a role with many. Does it have a role in your life?
Not necessarily. And I don't say that in a negative way. It's just the way I was grown up and my current family situation. It's not a huge player there. But I have many friends that it is. And personally to me, it's however it works for you, let it work for you. And like I said, I'm not here to knock anything anybody does. I try to respect others for what they do and treat them as the individuals that they want to be treated based on the respect they give me. So that's that, I guess.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Steve and Deputy Chief, I absolutely appreciate you being on the show, the Get Balanced podcast. And it's truly an honor. And thank you very much.
Dr. Hutchinson, thank you very much for the opportunity as well. Keep up the good work. It looks like you got a lot of great things going on out there with a lot of great guests. And I think one of the benefits of the internet today, as well as social media, is getting the exposure to different individuals so we can learn a little bit from everybody we have an opportunity to interact with. So if I can ever be of assistance to you, please don't hesitate to reach out again.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.